Hello and welcome to the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. My name is Claire. I am your host. That sounds bizarre. It sounds like I'm on some kind of game show, but we are not. You are in the right place if you have PCOS. Instead, as well as being your host, I am a registered nutritionist. I've got a background in exercise science and natural fertility education. And I also have PCOS, which is why I'm super passionate about helping you not make the same mistakes that I did for the last 10 years and instead not be fighting your body all the time and get to the answer quicker. This is a Q&A mini podcast where I take your questions that you submit to us on our Instagram stories. So we're at the PCOS Nutritionist, and every Tuesday or Wednesday we put up a question box, and then on this podcast I answer as many as I can without talking as rapidly as possible. So let's get into it. First question that we've got. So I'm focusing first on those that relating to the podcast we've been doing recently about contraception. So focusing on them first. First one from Kate. So Kate asked, so if the contraceptive pill prevents ovulation, does that mean our egg reserves aren't being depleted? Really good question. For those of you that don't quite understand what we're talking about here, so if you go back a couple of podcasts to our podcast all about the hormonal contraception, in there I explain that one of the ways that hormonal contraception works is by stopping your body from ovulating or releasing an egg. And the theory when it comes to, so ovarian reserve means how many eggs you have in your ovary. The theory is that we are born with the maximum amount of eggs we'll ever have in our life, and then as we ovulate and get our period, we slowly release those. And so Kate's, you know, quite right in thinking that, well, if I'm not ovulating, does that mean therefore I'm not releasing an egg and therefore they're kind of stayed being stored, and therefore maybe my fertility might be extended if I use hormonal contraception? The answer is no, which is so counterintuitive because the theory is right. But there have been a few studies that have looked into this and they don't think it does. So just a couple of things here. When they've done the study, so what they've done is they've taken, there was one done in 2015 and one done in 2012 that I know of, but basically they took two groups of women, one group that had been on hormonal contraception and one group that had not been on hormonal contraception. And they used a hormone called anti-Müllerian hormone, which is a hormone that is supposed to be a good indicator of how many eggs you have or your ovarian reserve. That hormone is actually really bad at doing that. Okay, it's a really bad marker. And this is why I get a little bit annoyed with fertility centers that are offering this test for women to determine whether they want to freeze their eggs or not, because it is such a bad test. And I would just, although, you know, the fertility centers are probably, you know, right in saying, well, it's the best we've got, I just don't think women are totally understanding how bad that marker is. And that if they knew that, they may then make a different choice about whether they wanted to spend $10,000 on getting their eggs frozen or not. But anyway, that's a slight digression, but it's just to, there has been a lot of research to show just how poor AMH is as a marker of ovarian reserve. And so when they've done these studies, they have used this marker, which is really bad. So it is really hard to say whether it's actually not. But in the studies, they did find that when they looked at two groups of women who are very similar, apart from their use of contraception, hormonal contraception or not, they found that those that had used hormonal contraception had almost 20% reduction in that ovarian reserve measured by AMH compared to those that had not used hormonal contraception. So yes, it doesn't look like that is the case, Kate. And I think the reason for this as well is that we still don't know nearly as much as we need to in terms of how our body deals with when ovulation has stopped happening and when those hormones have been turned off, like what hormonal contraception does. And there's probably a whole lot more to it than what we really understand and how that affects the eggs developing and our ovarian reserve. Next question from Nicola. What are the best apps for fertility awareness as a contraception? So first thing, Nicola, I would say if you're just relying solely on an app where you're not putting in any other data apart from the days of your period, you are on a fast track to an unwanted pregnancy. So using those, it's called the rhythm method. I did outline this in the non-hormonal contraception podcast. That is only about 60% effective, i.e. very, very bad. So please don't just use an app like that. Apps are fabulous for entering in your data, entering in your information. That information should be temperature and it should be cervical fluid or cervical mucus. Okay, they are the two that you really need to use fertility awareness as hormonal contraception. None of those apps are going to sit down and walk you through how to do that, how to take your temperature, how to take your cervical fluid. So you're going to need to go and work with someone or read some books. I provided lots of resources in that non-hormonal podcast about how to do that. Ideally, like, read the books first and then maybe get a consult or two with a natural fertility educator to make sure you're doing it right and interpreting your body signs and symptoms right if you want to use this as a contraceptive method. Okay, otherwise you're relying on that you have interpreted that information correctly. The only other one that I know makes you do at least one of them is Natural Cycles, which they basically get you to use your temperature, and then they use their computer algorithm to tell you when you are fertile, when you are not. I would be very cautious about that if you have PCOS and irregular cycles and it is saying that you're not fertile before you ovulate. So temperature can only, because they only measure temperature, and temperature can only confirm once you've ovulated. So fine, you know, the temperature can definitely confirm that, and then you can have unprotected sex after you have ovulated. But before that, if it's showing, saying to you, no, you're fine to be having intercourse, then I'd be very wary about that, because no computer algorithm can ever predict changes in the environment like COVID-19 and the effect that can have on your cycle in terms of delayed ovulation, early ovulation. It doesn't know that you're sitting exams next week. It doesn't know that you've just, your mum's just died. It doesn't know that you've been slapped with a $20,000 lawsuit. None of that it can interpret, and all of those things can change your cycle, and especially if you have PCOS, your cycles might be a lot more irregular. So I'd be cautious personally. If it was me and I didn't want to have an unwanted pregnancy, I would be using the other sign, cervical fluid, which can be used pre-ovulation to tell you when you're fertile, when you're not. So that would be my personal way to go about it. As a trained teacher in natural fertility education, which I am, that would be what I would be if I was being as careful as possible, which I obviously would do with anybody's reproductive and contraception. I would advise you to use both of those signs to understand your fertility. And if you do, then all of the stats in terms of the effectiveness is in that non-hormonal contraception podcast. I'd also be using kind of pre-ovulation as a secondary measure, some kind of barrier method. Condom, diaphragm, cervical cap, spermicide is always a great option as well to just double up on the the pre-ovulation, your really fertile stage, as well as the cervical, understanding your cervical mucus and therefore when you're fertile, when you're not. I think that was all in terms of the contraception part. So just another couple of quick questions. Elaine, you're asking, how do you cope with sugar cravings, both the physical desire and the mental battle? Oh my God, Elaine, I cannot tell you how much I resonate with that question, because I have been where you are. I know just how intense those cravings can be and how much occupancy it takes in your mind when you're constantly trying to avoid it. I would say that for me personally, and most women that I've worked with, until we've actually addressed insulin resistance and figured out whether it's actually insulin that is causing those sugar cravings, if it is, then until we've actually addressed that and got your insulin back down to a normal level and it's not having these massive peaks and troughs, it's really hard. I think that with sheer willpower alone, it's almost impossible to, because it's basically, if they're caused by insulin, which is a lot of the sugar cravings, what's happening is that your insulin is like on a roller coaster going up and down. And when your insulin goes down and your blood sugar goes down, your body is trying to compensate and go, whoa, okay, blood sugar is low. Like, we need to rectify this ASAP. And so it wants to get that up. And the quickest way possible is sugar. And so, yeah, it's going to drive you to seek out sugar as quickly as possible. So hence, you're going to get really bad cravings. So that's why I'm saying that. And if it's caused by that physiological response, it is damn hard just with sheer willpower to override that, because your body is giving you a message. I need to get my blood sugar back up. And so really, I think the response is, well, let's not get you on that insulin and sugar roller coaster from the start. Okay, let's overhaul your, well, let's tweak your diet as much as possible to stop you getting on that roller coaster from the start of the day. That would be how I address it. Izzy, I've been diagnosed with PCOS spectrum. Does that change it for me? No, I think that's just the term that your doctor has used. PCOS is a spectrum. That is what it is. It's like irritable syndromes are all spectrums. So irritable bowel syndrome, premenstrual tension syndrome. So that is as far as I know in terms of, as I've said in previous podcasts, the diagnosis part is not my area. That is not something I'm qualified to do. And so I only work with people after they have been already diagnosed. But I would go back and ask your doctor and say, what does PCOS spectrum mean? But as far as my understanding goes, that would mean that you are just, PCOS is a spectrum. So you are on the spectrum somewhere. Alicia, what to expect with pregnancy and larger weight? I would just say, Alicia, that the only thing that I would watch out for everybody with PCOS, regardless of weight or not, is that because 80% of us have insulin resistance, you're going to be at greater risk of gestational diabetes. And this has got nothing to do. So about 75% of women with lean PCOS also have insulin resistance. So that means that you're going to be at greater risk of developing gestational diabetes. Okay, so it doesn't matter about the weight, but it's just all women with PCOS, I'd say, be very aware of this. And therefore, you're going to, best is to work with someone who really knows what they're looking for, do proper testing to figure out if you are insulin resistant. And again, insulin resistance is a spectrum as well. So it's not like you either are or you aren't, you're on a spectrum. But what your insulin's doing, and if you're going to need to manage that in pregnancy. And I think this, knowing this is so, so, so helpful, especially in that first trimester, because that first trimester is one where most women are going to have food aversions. Your smells, things are going to put you off, you're going to have nausea. And so a lot of women tend to gravitate towards the refined carbohydrates, your breads, pastas, rice, things that are easily digestible, not offensive on the smell and palate. But if you have some insulin resistance, that's not going to be great. And so we need to come out with ways and foods that you can have that are easy on the palate, easy on the nose, but not super refined carbohydrates. So just, yeah, I would say all women with PCOS need to be aware that you are at greater risk of gestational diabetes, and that, yeah, and to be aware and managing that right from the first trimester. Last question we've got is from Nicole. So what is the very next step after getting a PCOS diagnosis? Really good question, Nicole, because I know it can be so freaking overwhelming, especially when you go into, like, on Instagram and or on YouTube or something, and there's just a plethora of people's opinions and ideas about what to do. From my personal professional opinion, it is to then figure out, okay, what is driving that? What is that root cause type for me? Is it insulin? Is it stress hormones? Is it inflammation, thyroid? Because knowing those things is going to then impact the success of any fertility medication. It's also going to determine whether you're at risk of things like gestational diabetes, and it's going to then set you up for a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby, and also help you in terms of your, like, as I said, with you, if you're going to go down a, or going to be using medication route, then what is it that's going to have the best impact, or how do you maybe what time you use that medication. A lot of women that are going down that have been diagnosed and have been trying to conceive will then be suggested to go on to something like Clomid or Letrozole to help with fertility and ovulation induction. But we know that women that have high levels of insulin, that medication is less likely to work. So, but most fertility specialists and doctors aren't really doing the sensitive testing for insulin. And so they're not, women are not finding this information out. So that's what I would be doing, making sure that you do alongside any fertility treatment that you are doing, is making sure that you're working with someone who knows how to identify this stuff for you so that you can find this out. And yeah, because I firmly believe that getting pregnant is not the goal. Having a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby is the goal. And if you are not getting the information in order to have that, then you aren't being fully informed and having the opportunity to have a successful, healthy, happy pregnancy. So that is it for today. We're at our time limit. So thank you so much for all your questions. Fabulous as always. You guys always amaze me in terms of your incredible questions and thirst for knowledge. So thanks so much for tuning in and all of your fab questions. See you next week. Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.